In the event, I don't know, that there are bluegrass people here and they came to hear us do a certain song, well, we would do it for you. But don't ask for no bluegrass hits, because we know, you know what they're supposed to sound like. We don't want to turn you off to your favorite song. But some of those Dry Branch Fire Squad things, we wouldn't want to come down here and not do them. And I also might mention that we're supposed to do a workshop here some other where. And we didn't bring no tools. But we used to do, we did have a request. Get your mandolin and your dobro. I apologize, I forgot about this. It happened right after I got out of the van. So we'd be in the key of F. True story, we somehow the workshop thing jogged my memory. So when we were younger rednecks, I was out in the field making hay one day, and my neighbor came out and he said, there's a guy on the phone, says he's a doctor, says he wants to talk to you. And we didn't have no doctors in our county, unless it was the tree surgeon. I went in and I got on the phone, and the guy said, this is Dr. Alan Lomax. I knew who Dr. Alan Lomax, I won't even tell this unless you guys do too. Anybody know who Dr. Alan Lomax was? Okay. I thought this would be one where everybody knew Dr. Well, he was the greatest folklorist and ethnomusicologist that ever lived. Matter of fact, whenever we played for him the last time, it was at the National Folk Festival in Washington, D.C., and he wanted to show us, he had curated some stuff at the museum. He wanted to show it to us, and of course, I hate to rule out you young people, but when we was little rednecks, we knew what the National Museum was supposed to be, because whenever the National Geographic would come out and go to the school library, we'd run right down to see what the Aborigines was doing that month. And we called that sex education. And so when we knew we was going to get to the National Museum, we was all excited. Dr. Lomax took us in there where he had curated stuff, took us right by the big elephant and the stuffed tiger and the blue whale and the dinosaur bones, took us clear up to the second floor where all the signs said Hope Diamond, drug us right past the Hope Diamond, didn't get back to a little anteroom where he had curated these things called dioramas. And the first diorama he took us to was called the Australopithecines. And, looked like the boys from Indiana and the Foggy Mountain boys and the Clinch Mountain boys had growed hair and found winter work. The second, I won't go there. But the second diorama was called the Neanderthals, and you can't make this stuff up. These Neanderthals were sitting around a pile of wood with a light bulb under it, and Dr. Alan Lomax, to show that a college education can be overrated, had put a sign in front of these poor old Neanderthals that they was practicing the primitive skill of building a fire with stones. And I thought, that takes some arrogance to call that a primitive skill, because the average modern man's going to take most of the day to build a fire with stones. Well, you couldn't hardly go out in the woods and find something less likely to burn than stones. Anyways, the next diorama was called the J.D. Cro-Magnons. And these Cro-Magnons, by this time they'd invented Cro-Womenions. And these Womenions were sitting around in nothing but skins, their own. Well, I got kind of interested in ethnomusicology myself. Anyways, I had to tell you that. I didn't have to tell you that. The first time he ever asked us to play was at a folk festival in Michigan. And I'll make this as fast as I can. But he said, whenever you come up here, would you be willing to do a workshop? And I don't really know the Latin or Greek language very good, but I knew the root word there was what I had become a musician to avoid. But we was trying to go along with it. We got out in the old van. We brought a spud bar, and we had an actual 9-pound hammer back when you could still get one. We didn't bring the tool kit that rolled across the garage floor, but we brought plenty of tools. And we was unloading this stuff up at the Folk Festival when Dr. Lomax come up. And he was very polite about it. It brought us a cultural liaison officer that told us we could put our tools back in because I was going to be on the workshop with Utah Phillips. And I'd heard of Utah Phillips. And I'd never met him or anything, but in part I didn't know is at the Folk Festival, Utah Phillips was a deity. Way back in these days, like if Utah Phillips would walk back, hippies would throw their clothes down in the rain so he wouldn't get his feet wet. And beatniks would sit beside the trail where he was walking and say poetry like, sin, sin, ah, chin, amo, pokra, up, 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 ting, ting, ting. So get up to the place where the workshop is and there's just two chairs. And I thought, this is the kind of work I've been looking for all my life. And how many people here ever got to see you, Utah Phillips, in person? Okay, well, then I'll paint this picture as easy as I can. The cultural liaison officer came up right before the workshop and said to me, the subject of this workshop is the politics of folk music. And I thought, boy, I hope Utah can carry the load. And I was not disappointed. And again, I hate to rule out the young people, but some people here will remember this. There was a time in this country when the world boxing champion was a man named Rocky Marciano. Rocky Marciano didn't have no tassels on his boots, didn't have no shiny robe when he come into the ring. What Rocky Marciano did was when they rung the bell in the fight, he met the opponent in the other corner. And after the opponent had been knocking on him for 8 or 9 rounds and got tired, Rocky Marciano would knock him out. And that was his fight strategy. And the best thing I ever learned off Rocky Marciano was you can get the snot absolutely beat out of you in a fight and still win it. And so when the bell rung in this workshop, it was like Utah Phillips was meeting the opponent in the other corner, and the opponent was the audience. And he was mad. He was pointing his finger. He was shaking big, long hair. And I just sat there relaxing. After a while, I realized what Utah Phillips was doing was telling these people how much better off our country would be if all the farmers were socialists. And I was a farmer. And I let him live. But he was a nice guy. He come around and tried to give us this song, and for years I was afraid to do it because I thought it would make me a socialist, but we finally did, and it did.